capacity.
Okay, except for 2013.
Yeah, that's the movie.
We went to Hello.
Hey, so.
Yeah, a year ago, so it's
3 days a year.
Recording in progress.
Regular meeting of the Board of Town Hall for November 13th.
December.
December 13th, I'm not off. 2021, from the order. Well, the first item I have is to look at the minutes for the meeting of November 15th. Everyone take a minute to review those. The minutes of the regular meeting of November 15, 2021, are there any additions, deletions, or corrections?
I have a couple, but you sent out a revised version electronically today that I never got a chance to look at. So you may have gotten, as we don't have pages yet, 4 pages in under a heading of Harrison Avenue Apartments, about 3 inches up to the bottom, a quote that says, Mr. Martin inquiries about the most recent correspondence on the SWIFT. It was October 25th.
Yep.
I think that was probably supposed to be a SWIFT.
Yes.
And you probably corrected it already.
Yes.
The rest of them were all minor typos. So
yeah. I think Ian covered most of them.
Okay. All right.
What?
Which
one are we talking about?
First item to up for this evening is Biochar Solutions.
We got to finish it next.
I didn't finish it, did I? Thank you. We have a motion on the minutes.
Make a motion to accept the minutes from November. What was it?
15th.
Meeting as amended.
Motion's been made.
We
approve the minutes of the November 15, 2021 minutes as approved, as amended. To the motion, do I have a second?
I'll second the
motion. Motion's been made and seconded. Any further discussion? I don't really think that's too controversial. All those in favor, aye?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Now we'll go back to where I thought it was going to be before. And that is the circle of the pie chart. Board, you have had an opportunity to review the environmental assessment form for circle of the pie chart solutions. Part one, are there any questions that you would like to bring up at this time? Any changes we'd like to make to this part one?
No.
If not, We'll move speedily along to part two and don't go to sleep.
And you have a copy right here?
Yes, I do. Thank you. In part two, you have two options of board participation. Your choice is either no or small impact may occur, or your second choice is moderate to large. First one is the impact on land. Proposed action may involve construction on a physical alteration of land surface of the proposed site. Yay or nay?
No.
I like that. I hate these masks. Impact on geological features. Proposed action may result in the modification or destruction of or habitat access to or landforms on the site.
No.
Three, impact on surface water. Proposed action may affect one or more wetlands or other surface waters.
No.
Impact on the groundwater. Proposed action may result in new or additional use of groundwater or may have the potential to introduce contaminants to groundwater or an aquifer.
No.
The consensus in Bellanova? Impact on the flooding. Proposed action may result in development on land subject to flooding.
No.
Impacts on air. Proposed action may include a state regulated air emissions source.
I think that's a yes.
That would be a yes. Okay. Proposed action requires federal or state air emissions permit and any activity against more greenhouse gases or above following levels.
Is that a yes?
That was a yes. So we've got that going. Impact on plants and animals. Proposed action may result in the loss of flora or fauna.
No.
Oh, I think you got to go back to impact on air.
Yeah.
You have indicated yes for the general question. Then, so 6A, 6A through F has to be addressed.
More than 100 tons of carbon dioxide. I guess we have to ask the applicant for that one.
Yeah, I think we're going to have a consultation with the applicant over some of these levels.
More than 100 tons per year of carbon dioxide emission?
Sorry, that's a yes.
That's a yes.
That's a yes?
Yeah.
And then you have to decide if it's, well, we know that, but then is it a, in your, based on the information you've heard or if you've got further questions, is it no or small impact or is it moderate or large impact? So the applicant has indicated they're going through the proper permitting with DEC.
Sure.
They're going to have the proper, scrubbing equipment, filtration, that kind of thing, on the emissions. So this is where we have to get into a bit of a judgment here. Is it, small or moderate? No or small impact or moderate to large impact?
I've only had an opportunity to kind of scan the permit for see what it specifically calls. So the air facility permit.
You're right.
I'm not an expert.
I'm a happy applicant. It's above 1,000.
First of all, can you get your name on the record for it?
Andrew Meltzbaugh, Sterling Environmental Consultant for the applicant. The CO2 emissions in the air permit application are less than 100,000 tons per year, which is the major facility threshold. So it is in the minor facility threshold, and it is under review by the department for a permit.
Okay. Don't go away.
Just so you know, the mask makes it a bit of a challenge. When you first responded, it sounded like you said over 100,000. And that kind of is like this open-ended limit, like where? That's why we're all kind of like, wait a minute, what do we do with this? Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. So, if I ask for clarification, it's not because I'm doubting you, it's because I'm not catching it.
Yeah, and I guess the clarification I would ask, if it's less than 100,000 tons, what is it? I mean, 100,000 tons sounds like a lot.
100,000 tons per year is the DEC threshold to go from a state permit to a federal permit. So they calculated the exact number is in the application documents, but it's on the order of between 90,000 and 100,000. So it's towards the limit of the threshold that's below it.
Okay, and it's tons of what?
Tons of carbon dioxide.
So I got a question for you. It's a good estimate. What happens if you go 102 tons?
So the permit application is for the full build-out of three lines.
Okay.
So the first line will get built, but the emissions will be verified through the stack test. And then depending on those emissions, it will determine whether all three can be built or two. But the application, as it's submitted, is for the full proposed build-out of the site.
But I'm going to assume that even if you did go to 102 thousand tons, then it would just require you to now deal with FD or with federal regulatory agency, not state. Is that the idea?
That could be one course of action. Yes, it would go to a different permit level. Okay.
So who verifies that?
It'll DEC. It'll be through the reporting of DEC. Yep.
Okay.
In addition to carbon dioxide, there are other emissions.
More than 3.5 tons per year of nitrous oxide.
And sulfur dioxide. And
yes or no on nitrous oxide?
That's a no.
That's a no.
On that threshold.
So that's small. And more than 1,000 tons per year carbon equivalent or perfect, somebody or others.
Perfluorocarbons.
Good. Thank you.
That's a no.
Thank you. More than 0.045 tons per year of sulfur hexafluoride?
That's a no.
If they're told no, everything is no.
More
than 1,000 tons per year of carbon dioxide equivalent of hydrocarbon emissions or something like that?
That's a no.
Thank you. 43 tons a year or more of methane?
That's a no.
I can pronounce that one. Right.
So, getting back to the first one, the threshold here is more than 1,000 tons a year of carbon dioxide. So your level is going to be a lot.
It's going to be around between 90,000 and 100,000 tons per year. Yes. All right. So, that's substantially more than 1,000.
Is that what was 1,000 or 100?
It's 1,000 on the form.
1,000.
On the first one?
Yes.
More than 1,000 tons.
That's why I'm coming back to it.
Yes.
So.
Moderate to large.
Yeah.
Yeah, so if that's going to be your response when we get to the end, we've got to address that. Okay. In the final questions in part three. But you can keep going. So that is the consensus on 6A, small letter I, is moderate to large impact may occur. Is that correct? Okay. Sorry, I just want to make sure.
No, we need to find out for sure. Don't mess. Okay. The proposed action may generate 10 tons per year or more of any one designated hazardous air pollutants, or 25 tons per year or more of any combination of such hazardous air pollutants.
And on behalf of the applicant, those are thresholds for the major facilities. Again, the 10 for individual HAF or 25 for any combination of HAFs. And as in the permit application documents, it's below those thresholds. So it's a no for that one.
We'll believe you. Those standards require a state regulation of any products of emission rate of total contaminants that may exceed 5 tons per hour or may include a heat source capable of 2 more than 10 BTUs per hour. You going to do that?
Well, the facility does require a state permit, air permit, and it has emissions that exceed 5 tons per hour.
So the board is a small amount.
What was the amount again?
We're going to exceed it, so I'm going to say it's probably going to be...
What is going to be your level of... because the threshold here is it may exceed 5 pounds per hour. What would you expect?
I will circle back to that in just a minute.
Okay.
Okay, the next one is a great one. Wolf's action may result, may reach 50% of any of the thresholds in HFC. What's your choice there, boy?
It appears that that is the case.
Well, there it is. Will that be moderate?
Again, I would... I mean, if it, in your opinion it's moderate to large, and that's what it is, and we've got to then come back at the end and see what forms of mitigation are being offered.
Yep.
I think that's a moderate to large.
Mm-hmm. I had context to that question in the EAF. The 50% of a threshold is where the DEC delineates getting a registration versus getting a permit. So we exceed 50% of thresholds, for example, for carbon dioxide. So we're not eligible for a registration, which has less restrictions, so we have to get a permit.
So if we put down moderate on these, the remediation may be the fact that you have that permit from DEC and you're being inspected by DEC now.
Right, so part three would be where you would clarify that.
That's what I'm wondering, is if that's where we're going.
It's not the end of the world, it's just moderate to large at this point, but I think in honesty that's what the level is.
Did you circle back on that other one yet?
I'm just pulling up the exact...
Okay, I didn't mean to hurry. We can keep going. I just didn't know if you wanted while you were there.
Closed action may result in the combustion or thermal treatment of more than 1 ton of refuse per year?
Per hour.
Per hour.
Per hour. I can't read you all that.
Does the feedstock this count as refuse, as it's referred to here?
It probably depends who you ask, but in terms of it's regulated as a waste from the DEC, so it is it's a biosolid, it's not a solid waste.
So will you be processing more than a ton an hour?
More than a ton per hour, yes.
I'm going to say moderate.
Is that small or is that moderate?
How much more than a ton an hour?
10 tons.
Moderate.
That's 30 tons worth of the whole thing.
10 tons per hour.
Yeah,
30
10
tons
per unit. Yeah.
All right, so in summary on this section, pending what happens with item C, once the information is found, I've got three responses so far in the moderate to large category of response. Is that correct? That's consistent with everybody else's?
Yeah.
Okay. Just want to make sure. So, because we have to circle back to these when we get to the end.
And actually, before we get past I'd like to express my concern that I don't know what it means if it's even at this threshold of 90 to 100,000 tons of carbon dioxide. I don't know if that translates into the impact on the community. I can understand that that's a threshold for licensing at state or federal level, but I'm at a loss to understand how it's going to affect the adjoining...
Well, that's what we've got to talk about in part three at the end. Those are the types of questions we have to take out.
Okay. Plant animal things. Those actually result in a loss of flora or fauna?
No.
No.
Well, those will be trees cut. You're going to be clearing the lot.
Not lot?
But I would say that that's still a small impact.
Yeah. Agricultural resources. Those actions may impact agricultural resources.
No.
not very responsive. In fact, in the aesthetic resources, the land use of the proposed action may obviously differ from or are in sharp contrast to current land use battle between the proposed action and scenic or aesthetic resource.
No.
Do I have a no on that one?
You have a no on that one. For me.
Okay. Historic and archaeological resource. The proposed action may occur in adjacent to a historic or archaeological resource?
No.
No. Open space and recreation. Proposed action may result in the loss of recreational opportunities or a reduction in an open space resource designated and adopted in the municipal open space plan. CEA. Proposed action may be located within an adjacent to a critical environmental area.
No.
No.
No, we don't have any time.
I know the answers to these questions.
Transportation. Proposed action may result in change to existing transportation systems.
No.
No. No. Has there been those traffic studies? And I saw it in the engineering report that there's reliance on a generic impact statement that was done maybe 30 years ago.
Yep.
And this is going to be generating 50 truck trips, I guess, a day.
Anticipated uses when the division then was at full build out, so they anticipated a greater volume. That's why they're going to be contributing to the amount of funds that the town has spent to correct some of the infrastructure in the highway coming up from 197.
So that's already been discussed, so there's going to be some mitigation on
that. No, it's already been done.
Sorry,
the town paid for it. And they're going to reimburse it.
Okay.
So part of it. Only their part of it.
So the generic EIS is still valid?
Still valid, yeah. In fact, in the end, those actions may cause an increase in use of any form of energy. Is that a no or a yes? I think they're going to.
They are. Yeah. More than all the plan for.
Okay.
Right?
Then we'll go down to the water tank. The proposed action will require a new or an upgrade to an existing substation.
No.
The proposed action will require the creation or extension of an energy transmission or supply system to serve more than 50 single or two-family residents or to serve a commercial or industrial use.
No.
Proposed action may utilize more than 2,500 megawatts per hour a year of electricity. Are you going to use more than 2,500 megawatts per hour per year of electricity?
We're going to be under that.
We're going to be under 2,500 megawatts. Can you state your name for that?
Sorry?
Can you state your name for that?
Raymond Dowden.
Okay.
Thank you.
Those actions may involve heating and handling or cooling more than 100,000 square feet of building area when completed?
Nope.
Impact. Noise, odor, and light. Proposed action will result in an increase in noise, odor, or outdoor lighting.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, I would think perhaps. And then a little question. Proposed action may produce sound above noise levels established by local regulations.
You're not going to make it more noise than it's allowed in local regulations, right?
Well, the local regulations don't have a specific threshold that says objectionable noise, and the generic environmental impact statement recognizes the thick vegetative buffer around. And in the environment, in the engineering report that was submitted, we did look at noise, unmitigated noise, to the nearest property line, the residents, and to the Hudson River, and with the noise being in the building, regulations, which do have threshold numbers.
Okay. There is a noise regulation in the town code, but again, this is measuring outdoors, so we're assuming to amend it. But I do have a question for you. You have in phase two, I believe, that you're going to be doing wood burning to generate heat for whatever you're going to use it for?
No.
No?
We don't burn wood.
Did you say wood grinding?
You say wood burning or wood grinding? You said wood burning, right?
Well, I thought it said wood burning because you're going to heat water or heat something.
You'd like to describe the process, Bryson?
Yeah, we're, and I guess you could say we're not actually burning the solid. In this case, we'd be heating up that wood so there would have been a gas, and we'd burn that gas.
So it's a gasification system.
It's pyrolysis.
Yeah.
So you're not actually burning solids, which I think is obviously a lot more difficult and has a lot more connotations to it. The solids actually come out of our process as fertilizer.
Okay, so you're going to be burning a wood product of some sort for some reason.
Well, we're not actually burning the wood. We're heating it up, and we're burning the gas that we take off of the wood.
Okay.
But we don't actually burn any wood.
And the form of that wood, is it a log?
It remains the municipal wood waste from the county, and the county is what we're looking for. It's more of a service to get rid of any additional wood waste you have. We can bring it into our process.
Okay, that's nice dancing around the question. But my real concern, my real question is, are you going to be using a chipper?
We will have a rotary grinder, a horizontal rotary grinder, as well as we'll have a couple small hammer mills on each line that.
Those are all inside of an insulated soundproof, relatively soundproof structure?
Those are planned to be inside, yes.
Inside, undercover.
Curiosity on my part, is that the same wood that you'll be adding to the processing for making the biochar itself?
It becomes part of the fertilizer. It boosts our carbon CN ratio, is what we're really using it for. We're only doing 1 ton an hour of wood. Whereas we tend to buy solids on each line. So it's more there to offer a cheap and inexpensive way to get rid of wood waste in the area, but also it helps us with our product to a certain degree. It's pretty much optional, but we elected to put it there as a service for the town. In the county.
This is Bryce Meeker that responded.
I'm Bryce Meeker, I'm sorry. Okay.
Thank you.
On noise, the engineering report said that first level assessment, the noise was exceeding acceptable levels. And so you go to second level noise assessment, which takes into consideration attenuating features. It seems that one of the attenuating features is dense forest. Around the facility, is that dense forest on your property, or is it on, are you assuming someone else is going to maintain a dense forest near you?
It's partially on industrial park property, partially the utility corridor that goes through that area, the overhead power lines, and then there's on privately owned land. So, the forest would, is that the maintenance of the forest would not be the control of the applicant.
So how can you use that as an attenuating feature?
Because it's an attenuating feature in terms of the guidance document for doing the first level and second level noise study through the Department of Environmental Conservation. But as you mentioned, the first level is you should take all your noise sources, aggregate them at one point, and assume they're all outdoors, and you see what the noise levels are at receptor locations. If those are fine, you don't need to proceed to a second level, since the first level showed that they exceeded the DEC thresholds at those property lines. You go to the second level, which is where you take into account your walls, your roof, and anything else such as topography or vegetation. In this case, since there's such a thick vegetation there, it was called out in the GEIS. We used it as part of the attenuating factors for the noise study. But at the end of the day, you know, the forest wasn't there. You have all that, you have the distance, which the sound attenuates over the distance, and they're all going to be indoors, so the insulation could be upgraded if needed, the thickness of the walls, the type of roof, all the engineering controls could be there to mitigate the noise if needed.
Well, what level are you shooting to maintain with those steps?
The thresholds at the nearest public receptor for this area would be 62 decibels during daytime, 52 decibels overnight.
So if the forest were to disappear, you'd maintain that?
Yes.
So common descriptor for 52 decibels.
Oh boy, that's even less than a lawnmower.
Okay.
Lawnmower, I think, is 65.
And it all depends on how close you are. Most of those are indexed at like 50 feet from the noise source. So yeah, 52 would be a quiet, you know,
that's
cricket chirping, quiet night. Yep.
Good. But you're talking about 52 decibels at the public receptor, not on your property,
not
on
your
distance.
Property,
you're
exactly.
Talking about at the public receptor.
Correct.
So that particular receptor, which is a person, okay, is going to hear a little less than a lawnmower decibel level at night, is what you're saying. I'm not being critical, I'm asking. I'm just trying to get a...
We don't need to grind wood at night, that's really not it. But we're also installing an electric grinder versus a big diesel grinder, which we're obviously a lot louder.
Right.
Bring up speed on what we're actually putting in. It's an electric grinder, all of it's electric.
I gotta say, I've worked around grinders in my day, and I've never really heard the engine over the grinder when it's grinding. So I'm not sure the decibel level is necessarily the power source. I'm not trying to... be difficult here. I'm just trying to get a grasp of what we're looking at. This is a commercial, an industrial site, a manufacturing site. So it's not like you're trying to put this in the middle of a housing development, but 52 decibels is quiet. All right. But if it's a consistent sound at night and it's 52 decibels, it becomes a lot louder at night. During the day, I'm like, no big deal. But
we won't be running the large grinder at night.
So that 52 is with the large grinder.
Correct.
What were the hours of operation for the grinder?
Daytime hours, but delivery hours, 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. So we won't be having a large wind bin. We'll be thrown at night. The only thing we'll have are the 30 horsepower hammer mills and the machines inside the building doing the final grind after we dry it. So you want to do the grinder at night.
So the hammer mills are post processing. That's particle size of the final product that you're
grinding out of. So. Yeah. It's after it's been dried. We only need like 10 horsepower on it. It's nothing to do. For each one. Again, for a sneaker.
Okay. Proposed action will result in blasting more than 1,500 feet of any river, hospital, school, the licensed daycare center, or nursing home.
No blasting.
Those actions result in routine odors of more than 1 hour per day.
What is the odor status on this? I know you have scrubbers. I know DEC is involved. I mean,
we've really kind of gone a little bit further than we ever imagined with odors, to be honest. We've got a wet spreading system that first takes out particulates, which are all odors. We have 99% recovery on that plus. Then we have an SO2 scrubber, that's kind of a nasty odor. We take that out, chemical wet scrubbing system. Then we go through an ammonia scrubber, which you probably never notice ammonia, but we're taking that out anyway. Next step, we're actually recycling that output for the fertilizer as well, ammonium sulfate. So that maybe goes to the wastewater. And then we have finally, for topping everything off, we have a bio scrubber. Those typically are just used by themselves. We have the other steps in front of them. So, I mean, it should be 90-99% of the staff after dispersion.
Is that bio scrubber a liquid scrubber?
No, it's a microbial scrubber. There's a couple, two large towers, two beds in each tower of microbes that pretty much digest the odors.
Do you recycle those scrubbings back through the system? Is that the idea, or
just the output from the ammonia scrubber?
Yeah. The particulate ones won't get fed back through the system.
Yeah, that goes with the wastewater. We may do that if you commit that for the future, but not there yet.
Okay.
That's kind of the goal of ours. We'd like to get down to zero discharge at some point, but there's only so far to go.
Okay, Lord, do we have a consensus opinion on the stink factor? No or small impact or moderate or large?
Well, I guess the threshold is that they have odor more than 1 hour per day. Routine odor. But there will be some odor.
There will be some odor. The entire building is built around, I mean, the only reason we have built a building on this equipment, it could just be outside. We build a building to contain the odors, to treat the odors, to bring them into our odor treatment process. Everything's under negative pressure. It goes through probably the most advanced odor treatment system you could possibly get in the dryer. I've never seen anything of this caliber. So as far as we're going the distance as far as we can, so sure it's not an issue. That's the last thing we want to have here.
So I guess the question is, does that mean that yes, it's a moderate, but it's remediated through your plans, or because you've remediated it, it's not a moderate, it's a none to small?
Yeah, I think you're, what I'm hearing is a choice between small or moderate.
I mean, even if we say moderate on that, it sounds like it's then remediated by your plans, your systems that you have in place. It sounds like a really nice set of scrubbers, to be honest. So I would say moderate on it. It's a potential exists.
It potentially exists.
Odor get addressed in your air quality permit?
That's part of the permit. Odor gets addressed as part of the, in two parts. Odor compounds that are kind of measured and regulated are covered in the air permit. Nuisance odor that's subjective is taken care of in the solid waste management facility permit. But there'll be a complaint response condition as part of the permit if complaints are received either by the town or by there'll be an environmental monitor set up for the site. That's a person who's assigned by the DEC who this becomes their site. So that'd be the one who administers responses to noise complaints, odor complaints, anything like that associated with the facility.
Okay, thanks.
Well, then that's a moderate to large, more than moderate type, but nonetheless moderate to large for 15C.
Proposed actions may result in light shining into adjoining properties. That's a no. Proposed action may result in lighting creating sky glow greater than existing area conditions.
Yeah.
And one we always avoid, other. Impact on human health. Proposed actions may have an impact on human health from exposure to new or existing sources of contaminants.
I think that's a yes.
Is it consensus of a yes on that one? Be brave, don't all speak at once. Proposed actions located within 1,500 feet of a school, hospital, licensed daycare center, group home, nursing home, or retirement community.
No.
More than 1,500 feet from Bluebird Road, right?
Correct.
Nope.
The size of the proposed action is currently undergoing remediation.
No.
A completed emergency spill remediation or a completed environmental site remediation or an adjacent site proposed action?
No.
The site of the act or the action subject to institutional control limiting the use of the property?
No.
The site of the action located in the institutional control lighting and use of, I just did that. Proposed action may affect institutional control measures that were put in place to ensure that the site remains protective of the environment and human health?
No.
No. I say yes, these things are true. Board of Action has adequate control measures in place to ensure the future generation treatment and or disposal of hazardous waste will be protected to the environment and human health.
Yeah.
Yes.
Moderate
to large. Yes, so that means no.
So it's moderate to large of that one?
Yes. Because they're doing all kinds of measures to prevent the 16F.
Is that a moderate to large?
Yes.
Those actions involve construction or modification to a solid waste management facility. You can't trust me there, it's no. Those actions result in the unearthing of solid or hazardous waste.
No.
Those actions result in the increase in size or rate of disposal or processing of solid waste. Those actions result in the excavation or other disturbance within 2,000 feet of any site used for disposal of solid hazardous waste.
No.
Victor, turn on that right
now. Those actions result in the migration of explosive gases from a landfill site to adjacent off the structure.
No. We get into
the proposed action will result in the release of contaminated leachate from the project site.
No.
Is this really true? Proposed action is not consistent with adopted land use plans. Careful, this is a negative question. Proposed action is not consistent with adopted
land use
plans.
It is consistent with the adopted plans.
So is your answer no?
No.
The answer is
no.
Yeah, whisper the mic. Just to keep you awake.
Yep.
Or to see if we're just sleeping through it or whatever.
Picture the bouncing ball.
Is this another community character? Closed action is inconsistent with the community, with the existing community character.
No. Because it is consistent with the existing community.
I regret to inform you that we have not completed part two. Now we're going to go to three. Okay. Another one. You're in deep thought. What is your decision for the final notice?
As I mentioned when you were going over the impact on air.
I think this is where you have to take up the responses that you indicated a moderate to large impact may occur.
An impact to air. I'm not sure what the impact is on the area. And you have 100,000 or 90 to 100,000 tons of carbon dioxide per year generated, even if it's within permit levels. And I have certain times we ascertain what the net effect is of that is, not being environmental scientists. And I don't know if applicant has any idea how you assess that.
That's okay.
Has the DEC determined that 100,000 tons?
Somebody did. It's your DOH. Okay. Here are the emissions. Is we've said that we have some moderate to large impacts on our air, and that's more than 1,000 tons of carbon dioxide. Now, how are we going to address that in making our determination?
So the threshold that we're given with the seeker is 1,000 tons.
Mm-hmm.
More than 1,000 tons per year of CO2 emitted. And the
projected releases more in the terms of almost 100 times that?
96,000 tons per year.
If you could humor me, where is the CO2 coming from? Is it coming from the actual processing or the process?
Coming from the processing.
It is from the processing itself. Huh.
Okay. And how do we plan to mitigate this 100%, 100 times increase? So we're going to close the door and forget about it? We're going to have it monitored by DEC or DOH or whoever does it? Or what are we going to do?
I would like to get the opinion of an environmental scientist as to what that, how that translates into impact on the community. I just have no idea.
I can't tell you.
I don't know either, but knowing that it's not a thousand, even if it's within a permit level, I don't understand what that means. It may be that it's harmless. But I think we had a couple of the other thresholds succeeded as well. I mean, that's got a little play there once we got past part of that. But I think we had a couple of other questions where
one of them was more than a ton a day for an hour of refuse, mm-hmm. and I don't know what the one in the middle was. I forgot it myself.
Yeah, I think I had that in the middle of it somewhere.
Both guys did their registration of first and emissions rated of full contaminants and received 5 pounds per hour from that guy?
Yeah, that's one that was kind of across the board.
Yeah. So it's producing more than 10 million gallons per hour.
And just as you know, we've been able to say, well, the sound of the, that's created, the noise at 52 decibels sounds like a mile or 50 feet, whatever. I don't have that same sense as to what is happening to air quality in the area. And it may be permissible, it may not be a problem, but I think we should consult with an environmental scientist. Perhaps you can tell us what that means.
Mr. Chairman?
Jerry?
Yeah, I've set up a question. I'm trying to, I guess, trigger my old memory here, but when the first meeting we had in Saratoga Biochar, the presentation, there was a discussion about that they weren't just carbon neutral. They were carbon, I don't know how to get the phrase right, carbon positive. Like they were going to take more carbon out of the atmosphere than they were going to put in. That's my recollection of the original presentation that was made. So I'm just curious how that works with what's in front of us here. Or if that was maybe a, maybe I misremembered.
May I add something?
Yeah, speak up so Jerry can hear you too.
Okay, no, your credit is actually carbon negative in the sense that we offset more carbon dioxide than what we put out.
Well, that's a very important factor.
Yeah.
That should have been stated a little earlier.
when you think about carbon emissions, you have to look at carbon, CO2e, carbon equivalent, carbon dioxide equivalent. When you look at methane, it's 23 times the carbon equivalent. When you look at nitrous oxide, it's 300 times. So the incinerator now, this tree is doing far more than we would ever do in terms of damage to the environment. We're offsetting that. We're offsetting the landfill where it's out there and creating methane emissions as it, decomposes. So by the time you look at the offset, from methane, from avoiding this 85% of biosolids roughly in New York are disposed of landfills, that's the biggest thing we're offsetting, but there's also a decent amount going to incinerators. So from carbon perspective, if I'm looking at, let's say, the California Air Resources Board, for instance, that has a very good system of quantifying carbon emissions, that's where I'm saying you would be carbon negative. And the reason being is we're offsetting, you may think 100,000 tons of carbon dioxide sounds like a lot, but it doesn't take much nitrous oxide to reach that. Very little, actually, in terms of equivalent basis. So what we're arguing here is saying we're carbon negative. We're offsetting more in the industry practices than we release in the environment, mainly on a CO2e basis, equivalent basis, of methane and nitrous oxide emissions. We're cutting those because we're taking into our process CO2 is one time CO2e. You know, if we look at nitrous oxide, that's 300 times CO2e, and methane is 23 times CO2. Offsetting these more disruptive gases is how we create a carbon negative impact. And then the other side of that equation is the carbon we actually produce in the soil, we actually produce, can actually be sequestered in the soil where it's needed. I often like to say right now, globally, we have a surplus of carbon in the atmosphere and a surplus of carbon in the ocean. But the strange thing is we have a deficit in our soil. So what we're trying to do is take this product and put it into a carbon form that can go back in the soils and sequester carbon. The process does take some, make some CO2. Whenever you burn anything, gas, anything, there's some CO2 that will come out of it. But the levels are low, and the reason they're not at any level high. And some of the feedback we've received, we might be overestimating our CO2 emissions actually a little bit. But I think, yes, there is CO2 emissions involved, but the offset we're creating by not letting it decompose, by not sending it to an incinerator, is much greater of an offset than what we're actually emitting. So if we were able to replace the incinerator, we would be having a huge decrease in public, a huge increase in public health, by the way, offsetting the incinerator. Most incinerators right now, nationwide, are kind of on a fixed timeline, a very limited timeline. Most of them are being decommissioned. Very few are being built because of nitrous oxide emissions.
So we've heard of a quantification of your gross, you know, CO2 output.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So I'll add to clarify, to add on to Bryce's point, that with the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act, the DEC does have to review all new permit applications. So this facility, in terms of overall greenhouse gas reductions to achieve the statewide goals. So part of their review process for the air permit is going to look at the alternatives that Bryce mentioned, the current practice of incineration and landfilling, as it relates to this proposed permit application for an alternate way to manage biosolids. And part of the review has to conclude that it is, on a greenhouse gas level, more efficient and better for the state.
Well, I guess that's where I'm going with my question. So you have a gross output. So factoring in the circumstances that you just summarized globally, can we pare that down to this specific facility? What is the net impact on CO2 emissions given the credits that you speak of for this specific operation at this location? Can that be quantified, or can you?
It can be quantified, and we intend to sell product in the California market at some point because of this. And that's actually one of our goals, is the carbon credits are worth quite a bit. And the reduction we make is material. I've taken several projects through this analysis of carbon in the past. Given the methodology, you know, will certainly be on the negative side. But it's a new practice, we'll call it, in CARB. You'll have to take a year or two just to discuss it and analyze it. And really, once we're running, that's the only time they can really do that. But it is our intent to go through that process with CARB, because honestly, that's one of our big selling points for our technology and for what we do. So that is something we will certainly verify in the future. And we'd be very happy if New York had a carbon cap and trade system. We'd be very much a benefactor of that, given where we're at with carbon emissions.
Okay. And I would say, overall, the process you described is very attractive. My concern still remains in the immediate vicinity of this neighborhood that has this increase in CO2. Again, I think overall what you're explaining in terms of a positive environmental impact is awesome. The question is, is there going to be some, is the CO2 a problem here?
Well, from one line, again, we go back to the sequential order. We're taking this one production line at a time. You're looking at the numbers in magnitude of three. So we'll get through the first one. We'll have stack tests. We'll know everything at that point precisely. But we're confident we're well within the numbers, much less of the CO2 than what we're predicting. Pretty conservative, our estimate.
So if for some reason Ann's concerns are legitimate, which I believe that they are, I agree with you. Okay. And the 90 to 100,000 tons expected per year, which is your three lines. Okay. If that were to become an issue, is there any remediation that can be done for that other than not having the three lines?
For CO2, you just do less.
Okay. So there's no scrubber for that CO2. It's just you would do less production, which would lower you below a certain threshold.
I worked in ethanol refineries where CO2 is a byproduct of fermentation,
right,
and it's produced and released on a much greater scale. I've never seen or heard of any issues in that industry from CO2, except if you were actually to climb up and stick your head in the back.
The reason I ask that is because not long ago I read an article about there being a shortage of carbonated sources for making soda, and it was something to do with the slowdown in the fertilizer production industry, and apparently the carbon dioxide was a byproduct of making whatever nitrogen fertilizer they were making from, I believe, natural gas. I mean, that's where it was.
Yeah.
So I didn't know if there was some remediation, albeit expensive, that could be put in place.
In carbon sequestration technologies, they can use a relatively pure source of carbon.
Right.
And we've seen that done on ethanol plants.
Right.
Coca-Cola's done that on a few plants, but it's expensive and it's very seldom. But by and large, from an operating perspective, you know, CO2 gas dissipates extremely quickly. And you know, we're going to have a hot stack, releasing it the atmosphere high. I don't see any real issues with human health in the area. The only real health issue would be if you stuck your head over the staff or something like that.
Okay. And then the other one we had in six impacts on air. Would those actions require a state air registration to produce an emission rate of total contaminants and exceed 5 pounds per hour or more for the heat source capable of producing more than 10 million BTUs per hour? You're going to exceed these thresholds?
Yes, so for the 5 pounds per hour, yes, it will have contaminants that exceed 5 pounds per hour.
And how are you going to remediate that?
Those are remediated through the air treatment systems. And as part of the airframe process, the emissions out of the stack, those that exceed not just 5 pounds per hour, but those that are all the regulated emissions out of the stack were modeled for dispersion out of the stack for ground level concentrations for comparison to the air quality standards at both the federal and state level. Those are shown as compliant for all for one line and majority for the second and third line, with the proposed action to be verify emissions for the first line and modify as needed for the second and third line.
More questions?
Could you be more specific about how you'd modify?
Well, modify would be either additional treatment measures or reduced production. And that's if the verified emissions after the first line show that there may be any exceedances for the second and third line.
So you're saying you would not exceed, by virtue of those steps, 5 pounds per hour?
Well, 5 pounds per hour isn't a threshold for exceeding or not exceeding. The emissions were modeled for all the regulated emissions, which includes those that exceed 5 pounds per hour, as is in this question for the part two, and those that don't exceed 5 pounds per hour.
Okay. Okay, board, you have that? Okay, the next one is combustion and thermal treatment of more than one ton of refuse per year. We had a click on that. Do we have any indication there at all?
That issue through your solid waste permit, correct?
Yes, well, all waste processed through the facility is regulated through the solid waste permit.
Okay. Any further questions? We have from the wall here. Okay. And then you are attempting to mitigate the odors through environmental controls, is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. Put the scrubber as well as to the building design.
Mm-hmm. Could you say that again?
Yes, that's correct. But we're mitigating odors both through the scrubbing system but also the enclosure, the building enclosure itself, is designed to be negative pressure to ensure all odors, no fugitive odors for these types of building.
I think I missed this previously. You're going to be negative air?
Yeah, the building will be under negative air pressure. The process creates an air intake, and so we pipe. We bring in air and pipe it into the system, and everything goes through the air treatment system. If the process is off, the biofilters still work and treat the air in the building. You don't need the SO2 scrubber, ammonia scrubber, if you're not drying.
Okay, great. Thank you. Now, board. I think I understand part of this. This is a miracle. Yeah. I'm still, personally, thinking for myself only, not for the board, I have a concern with, because I'm dumb, I have vacuum turbine dioxide. So do we need a peer review from someone who knows what they're doing in this? And is this level of the exceed, or the amount of the tendency, is hazardous to the neighbors? Is it just uncomfortable for the neighbors? Or is it, you're fools, it doesn't mean anything. I don't know. I cannot tell you. And they know I can't tell you. So.
I think, if I may, I think my concern here is usually in seeker. If we find something that pops as a moderate, to large, the first thing we ask is, what's the remediation of it? Okay? Which is why I asked that question. And the answer at the moment seems to be, there isn't one, but there isn't one needed. Which is new territory for me. Because
I don't think that's what's being said.
No, I'm not saying that negatively. I'm saying that it seems to be that it's an okay, or you're saying that it's not being said that it's an okay emission.
No, I think what's being said is the emission, first of all, it's coupling. At this gross level of emission for CO2, what I'm hearing is that the rate of dispersal and the area of dispersal is in fact the form of mitigation.
Okay, all right.
All right? So it is 100,000 tons per year. But it's not like it's 100,000 tons that's coming in 2 seconds. It's 100,000 tons that's being spread over 365 days and over geographic area. Now, I don't know what that geographic area is, but that's what I'm hearing is the explanation.
Okay.
Because that's what that would factors into the DEC permit.
Right. And where I was going with it is there's a portion of me that's comfortable with the fact that at least it's under DEC purview.
Yeah, that's why I said. And then the second factor is, globally, they're claiming an offset by virtue of their process taking CO2 out of the environment. They're actually, you know, a net. They're benefiting that. But as Ann suggests, that's all fine, well, and good. But we still do have this concentration that's occurring within the plume of this stack.
Well, I was just going to say, as a global citizen, I'm really glad to hear that. But
right.
As a town rural planning board member, I'm not a global planning board member. So
right.
We do have to look at it from our...
Exactly. So the concern comes over the dispersal rate and the amount that's coming out of the stack and where is it spreading to, you know, and at what rate, at what frequency, and all that kind of thing.
So then I will rephrase what I said. We are saying that there is a remediation, that it's being overseen by DEC, and there is a reporting process if it doesn't operate properly.
Right.
We also, this is also a phase thing, so this 90 to 100, this is with all three lines in full production.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
Hey, if I can, just for a second, I just got my calculator out just to, I guess, put a little context to this. If I'm not mistaken, 2,000 or 100,000 tons is 200 million pounds. And that works out to be like almost 23,000 pounds in an hour. So that just seems high. I just find it hard to believe it. I don't know your process, but it just seems like that's a high number to me.
We agree. It is a high number. We know we've overestimated it. To be conservative.
Okay.
But I guess then my question becomes, Jerry, what does that mean? What's a big number?
Yeah.
I don't know.
And it may disperse in such a fashion, it's not a problem. But I concur with Peter's suggestion that we consult with an expert who can tell us what it does.
And there's two ways to do that. Either you suspend the review and seek that kind of assistance now, or you toss deck this and you go off to a environmental impact statement and you let the NIAGS get your help that way.
I think it would be useful, I would use this on the applicant's or a third party, to find out what fish puts out, what wheel warrior puts out. So we have some respect to context.
Right, that's
yeah.
The only thing that's a factor here.
Yeah.
Yep, that's true.
I think I would recommend the board, and of course it's up to you, is that we table and get some advice from somebody who really knows what they're doing. Not someone who's related to the applicant, nor related to anybody that's anti whatever they're trying to do. Because my thing is, I don't know. And I hate that when I don't know.
Is there a source at DEC to consult on something like this, since this is their thing?
Well, that's what we're saying.
I mean, they could give you an idea what other permitted industries are doing and, you know, that kind of thing, right?
We could start there. I don't know.
I don't know how much access we're going to have to that. In my opinion, I think we should go off as we do with traffic so frequently. Get to a third-party objective source to review the information or try and put this in some context, you know, for what we're looking for here, which is mainly the impact of the local community and the region.
It's all right, Jim. You can say put it on somebody who really knows what they're doing rather than letting it on any of my people figure it out.
Well, I agree. No, I have respect for the process that this is being reviewed by the planning board, which is, you know, residents of the community. We all struggle with this. But I think at some point, you know, we do need to hire or seek, I should say, some third-party advice here.
So, Mr. Chairman,
if I may, I pulled up some,
I pulled up some of the local Title V air permits.
I'm going to stop you right here for a moment, because you're going to hate me for this, but that's
sure.
Anytime we need to interject, if you identify yourself, the machine does not know who's talking.
Oh, sure.
We need to tell it so we can get into the minutes.
Yep.
Thank you.
Andrew Millsbaugh, Sterling Environmental. Just to provide context, for 100,000 tons per year of carbon dioxide, as an example, the cement plant in Glens Falls emits 267,000 tons per year of CO2 per year, so this would be less than half of that.
That sounds more interesting. But the question board, what do you want to do? Do you want to charge ahead?
No.
Do you want to hold up for recommendations from an independent consultant? To get me out of trouble? Or whatever. Your call.
Mr. Chairman, may I ask you? Bryce Meeker, another inch paper, how much is that? Inch paper, which is one I think you know here, for 215,000 tons a year, or half of again for paper mill. I think in context our CO2 emissions, but it's similar to the lion's source. And that's relative to a lot of other industries. And I would also say, given the scale of the amount of biosolids which we receive, it's pretty remarkable that we can get by with that level, if you want to put it in context. If I'm going to put this to an incinerator.
To put it in context, in your little laptop you have over there, do you have the numbers for Wheelabrator?
For what?
Wheelabrator, the incinerator in Hudson Falls, it's burning sewage right now.
Give me a minute.
Because that's local. That's here. It's in our neighborhood. I'm not sure it's quite important, but anecdotally it's interesting.
So the CO2 for that one was 63,500, but they've got 243 tons of NOx.
Okay.
So that's, again, multiplied by 300 to get your equivalency there. And that's a small incinerator, by the way.
Yeah.
I don't know the book line. You know the line? It's a pretty small one. I mean, they wouldn't be taking a fraction. They wouldn't be taking a fraction. I mean, 7 tons, do you think? 70
okay,
tons
Lord.
A
day. Okay. Sample suggestions, recommendations. Now the call is yours. What do you want to do?
I would suggest that we hire a consultant to review the items that we noted as moderate to large impact and give us an assessment as to how that impacts the community.
Oh, is that a motion?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And not only how it impacts, but what measures might be taken to mitigate those impacts.
Motion has been made to engage the services of a consultant to adjudge those mild to moderate impacts of whatever we have identified. To the motion, do I have a second?
I would second that. I would like to have an engineer look to make sure that we're doing everything we can to.
Motion has been made and seconded. Any further discussion?
Yeah, Pete, can I ask a question? I just want to understand the process-wise here. So we go to a consultant and we ask them to look at the moderate to large impacts, and we're asking them to, did I understand this correctly, recommend mitigations?
No, to assess the impacts and, if possible, suggest mitigations.
Okay, I suggest mitigations. Oh, I want to know from, like, this whole seeker process, if they come back with suggested mitigations, this one is new to me. This is a much more in-depth seeker, it feels like, than we've done. Maybe not in-depth, but we've run across things that we haven't run across in my time on the board. So if someone comes back with suggestions, is this the point in the process where they get incorporated, or are those, you know, how do we fit this review into the Part 3 secret?
What would happen there is that we would get comments from the consultant, and he would undoubtedly offer some opinions. And then we would then go along with his suggestions or ask the applicant for mitigation measures to any red flags that he's thrown up. And of course, if that, depending on the results of that, and I'm not prejudging anything, it would either go to a decision that we would make, or we would go to a positive declaration, which then would require an environmental impact statement.
Okay.
I don't think it's appropriate at this time to do that.
So, well, what we're trying to do, Jerry, I don't know if you've got an assessment form there, but in my way of thinking, this is Jim. We're asking the consultant to look into the first three bullets on Part 3 of the evaluation. In the context of what the applicants presented in their application and in their information, and then assess that as it's laid out here, and are we in fact coming to a conclusion of a positive declaration, or is there enough, as it's phrased here, design element or project changes that can be incorporated that you can see your way clear to a conditioned negative declaration.
Okay. I just want to make sure, I just wanted to understand how we would incorporate any suggestions from the from a consultant. And I think I understand now, so I'm good.
Okay, more. Any further discussion?
Now, the other thing I would like to establish, Peter, is there consent from the applicant to participate, you know, in this by formation of an escrow account, you know, to fund this?
I would hazard a guess that he's expended enough funds so far that he's over this extra step. But of course, that's their call. As far as we're concerned, we have a motion on the board. The floor on the board. Any further discussion on the motion? If not, would you call the roll, please?
Meredith Matias?
Yes.
John Arnold?
Aye.
Ann Perdue?
Yes.
Mike Shaver?
Yes.
Gary Bouchard?
Aye.
Peter Jensen?
Yes. I have that.
Six
in the affirmative. Is that correct, Madam Secretary?
Yes.
It is. Motion carries. Okay, then I guess, of course, as Mr. Martin has brought up, the next question is to the applicant, do you want to extend the escrow account, or maybe to have this accomplished?
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
If Raymond Dowd is here at Toba Biochar, I just want to understand the intent to request a third party opinion on this CO2 emissions question. Is it in regards to human health concern or something else specifically?
We are concerned about the human health, yes, obviously.
I assume so.
Yes.
And that warms my heart because it's not regulated as a hazardous emission. We're filling the air with it right now as we breathe and talk. So if we're evaluating it from the global perspective, as we talked about earlier, we feel very good about that. And if we're going to evaluate it as a human health concern, I also feel very good about that.
Thank you. I guess my only comment, because I would like to be sneaky, is we may have global implications. But Mr. Jones, who lives a half mile away, is more concerned about what's going on in his backyard than what's going on in China.
Absolutely.
Or someplace. So that's why we would like to have this review, because the first one, I'll be the first to admit, I do not have the expertise to do this and make those qualification judgments. I need results or opinions from a consultant who is familiar with it and is not tied to either the applicant, to the board, or to anyone else on an independent opinion. And then we'll try to spell the line from there.
Very good. Now, if it would, and I offer this for the sake of allaying any, you know, fears and making sure that everybody, both the board and the applicant, understand what is being asked for and what will be produced, I could draft a scope of services and distribute it, you know, for review. So we have a written understanding of what's being asked for and what will be provided. So there is.
We should not do this in the dark.
So there's no surprises, and we have a nice tight scope. So you understand what the funds are being asked for, and the board will make sure that your concerns are being addressed and the information is provided. That sounds reasonable, perfectly fair. Thank you. This might take a little extra time early on here, but I think it would be a well worth step to take rather than get further on and questions aren't asked or aren't addressed, and there's further delay and further delay and further delay. So that's what I'll do. I'll draft up a scope for the board to review, for the applicant to review, and when we get mutual agreement on the wording of the scope, we'll send it off to some qualified providers.
Thank
you. And I'll distribute a list of prospective proposers, if you will, as well.
Thank you.
Either anybody party to the email. When it's distributed, it has some ideas for people to contact, I will certainly do that.
Turn about his own script. If you haven't been having any further questions of us other than the fact that he'd like a shoe goal.
Well, no, I think on balance, you know, we could have went right to a pass that.
Yeah.
I mean, so we're trying to be, I think, fair. And well, I would remind you we have a public hearing scheduled for this evening as well.
Yeah. We're almost there.
Almost.
In fact, seeing as how Mr. Martin brought that up, and we have now not done what we need to do. Or, do I have a motion to table the environmental assessment review for Saratoga Biochar until such a time as the consultant gets their opinions back to us?
Do we have to table it, or can we just leave it open?
I'll
make a motion that we table it until we've had an opportunity to hear from our consultant and kind of look into what they say.
Okay. What did you make for a second?
I second.
Yeah. What did you make a second? Any further discussion? If not, I don't think this is too controversial. All those in favor, aye?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Abstention. Now, I do have one question, Jerry. Was your in response to delay because you're virtual, was that a positive or a negative?
A positive. I vote aye.
Okay. You're a victim of Mr. Dell. Thank you.
Understood.
Now, seeing as how that's taken care of, we can now go into the public hearing portion. And for our public hearing, we have two major ground rules. First one being that is, if anyone has a question, I would love to ask a comment concerning this application. They're encouraged and invited to do so. Second one is, and that's your opinion, anyone who wishes to do that, ask a question or statement, if you would, how do I put it, You want to state your name for the record, and that is strictly for record keeping purposes only. So 6 months from now, when someone said, John Smith or whoever made the statement to that, or whatever it is. And our third and probably most important one is throughout the whole process, we will maintain some sense of decorum. So with that, does anyone have a question or comment that they would like to make concerning the environment, the site plan review for Saratoga Biochar? Yes, sir.
Vince Farr, 163 Point Edward Road. I got several questions. Just for my own knowledge here. What we're talking about is sewage waste that you're going to burn?
We're not going to burn anything. We're talking about the residue solids from sewage treatment plants, which is biosolids, right? So that settled sludge has been treated with the microbes already. So it's already converted from raw to biosolids.
So it moves by truck?
Excuse me one second, Bryce, are you plugged into this? Public questions happening now.
It's moved by truck?
Correct.
And what classification is on the truck?
I'm going to allow Andrew to answer that, but it's all DOT regulated. Or we have
Jeremy. Yeah, I
know. This is Jeremy Tenson, Cellula Waste. We transport biosolids in 65-yard dump trailers, fully gasketed with tarp systems, and they have road permits and DOT permits.
What class is it? Is it
it's a dump trailer.
It's a fiber, right?
No, there's no fiber.
No fibers?
Just dump trailers.
Okay, so the waste is not hazardous of any nature or biohazard?
No.
It's certified as a waste product that has to be managed as a waste to the point of a certified facility. This would be a certified facility. Yeah.
Okay. I see here that you have purchased a plant, so I can assume that you run this whole process. But have you done it with this equipment that you've got outlined here, the new equipment?
Are you referring to the air treatment that we fell on talking about, or the actual processing?
The actual process.
So we've run pilot tests. We've taken our ESO. There's two major components to the system. The first is the dryer. We receive the biosolids from Casella, from the transporter, and they have about 75% water content still. But it's a sludge, it looks like a solid, but it's still a lot of water. So the first thing we have to do is get the water out. So the first major component is the dryer. We pump a lot of hot air through that. And that's where, that's the order primarily we want to treat is the air pumping through that. And the second stage is a calciner thermal reactor where we heat that to a certain temperature and agitate it for a certain amount of time that converts that material and releases the synthesis gas, which we then capture and use as fuel. That's what makes us very efficient. And through that process, we also actually break down all the compounds in there and actually create the carbon fertilizer. So those are two major components of the system itself.
So basically, you have pilot facilities? Could I say that?
Oh, thank you. Yeah, so what we've done is we've taken biosolids that are already dry, and so they're not, 75% water.
Yeah, biosolids drying has been all over the United States and many of downtown Milwaukee, for instance. That's a biosolids dry. There's several on the East Coast. Biosolids drying is nothing new. The second step is where we take that dry polish, that dry product, and run it and bake it, basically. That we've done on several different pilots.
But the equipment that you're outlining in here, there's some European equipment.
That's the air treatment system.
Right. Have you put that equipment into this process yet?
That's just on the air treatment side. So that's not really integral to our process. It's just treating the air from the dryer.
Yeah, I understand.
That is more or less just off the shelf kind of air treatment.
Right. But you're dealing with the specification of the manufacturer. Build your plant.
Yes, correct.
Okay.
We're seeking process guarantees from the manufacturers, and we will get them.
Okay. So when you start putting information into the state for a permit,
yeah.
It's theoretical data.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
we've done testing on the gas that this creates, and
but you haven't done the existing or the new equipment that you plan on using.
We've done the smaller version, but yeah. Yeah, these ovens will go on.
Typically, when you do a new process, okay, you build a pilot facility, you run it, you get some data off of it for all these different points.
We've got a guarantee from the manufacturer that it's going to be something that's. So they tested it.
From that data, you then select manufacturing with your specifications.
Exactly. We've gone to the manufacturer.
So the permits that you asked or would submit to the state at this point are theoretical.
Yes, and most of them have been overestimated on the
right. Then when you build the actual thing, then it has to conform to the state requirements.
Yeah, and so we're building in three phases.
Right. I'm just trying to understand that part.
If I could add to that for just one second, the part where it becomes theoretical is there's no way for us to pilot this at scale.
Yeah,
so what the pilot we did, we draw a box of viral cells, you could put it right here at 4 feet, you know, and ran it through the machine. It's a smaller scale, but we took data from that, we captured gas, we held testing, we liked the way it worked, we made the product we wanted, and we had success. So we have to extrapolate for larger scale.
Yes. But you did buy the process, correct?
We did what?
You did buy the process.
We were purchasing the process.
Yes.
From an element.
From an established manufacturer, similar material. They do this for other industries. Different feedstocks.
So again, from the state standpoint, they would actually do physical testing of the stacks when you're ready to put the factory online.
Yes.
And I think there's ongoing monitoring after that.
Yes. Andrew, do you want to address that? You characterized that actually before. They'll start to get a lot of monitoring.
Andrew also has strong environmental. We put together the air permit application for this facility. And similar to what you're talking about, pilot scale, bench scale, doing that, this is being constructed in phases. So the application is for the full build out of this facility. It's going to be built in thirds, so a third will be built, and as part of the startup testing, there'll be stack emissions tests to verify the real bench scale test data that went into the application, verify that those are accurate or if they can be modified. And if they need to be modified without going to lines 2 and 3, either with changes to the production throughput, how much you can actually do to stay within thresholds, or modifications to air treatment to stay within thresholds.
Your permit would, how should I put this? When you're filing for this permit, it's three times. In other words, you'll have three basic facilities, same thing.
So the permit will be for one facility, and it'll include conditions for permitted to construct phase one.
Right.
Benchmarks to be able to go to phase two, benchmarks to be able to go to phase three.
Anyone else?
Yeah, wait, I still got questions.
Excellent question, by the way, thank you.
In your process, you use sulfuric acid?
Correct.
That's in the scrubber?
Yeah, correct.
Okay. You store that itself? That's
correct.
You store
that sulfuric acid tank
on ground?
Above ground, yeah.
Oh, yeah, we can take it.
And you said you get it locally?
Say
again?
I don't know.
We procure from our materials locally to the extent possible.
We'll get the sulfuric acid from a local vendor here. Surfac Chemical.
Pardon?
Surfac Chemical is only looked at.
Oh, Surfac?
It'll be a local company that carries it. It's common. It's just really very struggling about that.
So your process, what you're doing is, this plant will be under negative pressure.
Correct.
So, and the purpose of that is for the odors. Right.
We want all the air being drawn into the plant, not being released. We want all the air being drawn in and pushed through our air treatment system.
Okay. And in here, you said that there was, I'm not sure what the plant is right here. You have something like 5,000, I'm not sure what you're using for measurement for odors.
ODs, odor units. ODs, OUs.
Oh?
It's actually a term they use in Europe, odor units.
Yeah, and you had 5,000 listed here?
Yeah, we reduced it. That's before treatment.
Before treatment?
Yeah.
Now, what does the truck do in there?
Odor units? I'm not sure on that. Odor units is not a common term used in DEC permitting and like local regulations, state regulations. It's a European term, and because
yes,
they have. They had performance data on the biofilter that they were planning on using, which had odor units in, odor units out, that showed how effective it can be at reducing the odors. That's why that information was put in there for that context.
Okay, but what would it come in and out on the truck?
I do not know that.
Well, I'm reading the ass. I was going down the Northway a couple weeks ago. There was a red truck with a triaxial dump. They had what? I say what? They had fluid running out the back, and the truck really stuck.
Was that a facility truck?
No. I'm not saying what it is. It's just how it's coming. I'm curious, first of all, if when you withdraw that from a sewer plant, it's what is their dewatering process?
Yeah, I can answer all that. Let's start with Saratoga County's dewatering process. This is a belt press. So the sludge is treated primarily with plugs, and then it's thickened, and then it's sent to a series of belt presses, which is basically to force between two plates, or in this case, the belt. It's actually manufactured in Greenwood. Most of these, 80% of the ones we see are the PDP presses that are actually locally manufactured. They're amazing. And they have to achieve, for us to manage it, well, most of the time, 20% solids, which is 80% water. But they add polymers to create a thickened material. And then they also, the requirements are that it has to pass the paint filter test, which is you condense the material and no water extracts, pre-liquid extracts.
So when you say it was put under, what's the amount of moisture?
Yeah, 80% solid, or 20% solid, 80% moisture.
20% solid, 80% moisture.
Correct. So there's still a lot of moisture. That's why this process will exist to further.
So again, my question is, what is this? The snow level and compared to
so another
let me draw this image.
Well, this
the interstate here is the thruway is a major traffic route for these trucks. There's hundreds there every day.
What's that mean?
That means if you're not smelling it yet, you probably haven't noticed it. They're passing by all the time.
I'm worried about when you drive by my house.
Yeah. But the,
okay, that's what I'm worried about. What the facility is doing.
Can I just add that we don't also enter into contract with biosolids producers unless they have odor control mechanisms on site to control the odors of the material leaving the plant. So in this case, you can use potassium permanganate, you can do hydrochloric acid, you can basically chlorinate it to reduce odors. And that's mainly...
Is that what you do?
We don't. The plant is required.
The plant is required to... They have to meet the standard.
Yeah, if they don't have the standard, which it is hard to establish a standard, with the idea that odor is very subjective, but... There are standards that are required, and they must have these compounds in their materials to prevent odor in transit.
There shouldn't be any free water leaking through the trucks.
I know what there shouldn't be.
Yeah, I mean, it has to typically pass a filter test to get to a landfill. So that means there shouldn't be any free water.
Okay. We're not talking about the landfill, we're talking about your factory. Right?
Well, yeah, but these trucks are currently taking all the material from the landfill.
If most of the sludge that you intend to burn for
Thoroughly free.
Is that coming from the local area?
Quite a bit will. That's the idea. So, I mean, initially, Jeremy is probably going to step in, but initially, we'll service these not locally, but these contracts come in. So they're going to be, the cell's going to be answered once all that works. But the idea is that we'll try to get all the local contracts and bring them in. That's the most sense, you know. So there will be quite a bit. So
I guess maybe the best way I can do is summarize this. Here's my concern. Owners,
yep.
My property does, it's a ways away, but it does, it's adjacent to the industrial park. And I'm very concerned about it because you were talking about when you're up to full production, 60 trucks in a 12-hour period, 6 to 6. Right? That's what, 14 minutes? Every 14 minutes the trucks will go down the Fort Edward Road?
Those trucks are not all containing biosolids.
No.
36 an hour about biosolids. The others are carbon and service trucks.
Oh, okay. I see.
Only about 36 trucks of trucks. So we get, you know, about 12. But it's up 3 an hour every 20 minutes.
That's still quite true.
But that's if we actually build all three lines. We'll start with one line.
I understand what you're going to start with, but this whole thing is about your total plan, correct?
We'd like to build a building, but it's also contingent to the staff test with the DEC and other things. We'd like to get there, but even that rate would be about a truck every 20 minutes if we were running at full capacity.
So do you have to go back through this process? Does the planning board have to go back through this process where they put plant number 2 on and plant number 3?
No, this is for the entire
thing. This is for the entire thing.
For the emissions, we have to go back to the DEC for the emissions of each line.
Yeah.
How does
the public know that that's happening? When you expand your plant, how would they know?
You know, would you be notified? Is that what you're asking?
We'll actually build an addition to the building when we do it.
Yeah, I know. I live by it.
We have to get an instruction from the plant too.
I mean, I suspect there's people out there right now that don't even know this is going on.
So I think probably. I think probably, if you're having a problem with the smell of the trucks going by or whatever, then the secret would be to let DEC and the company know.
Exactly.
And the point being, I don't know that you need to be notified when the next line comes on. If it's a problem, it's a problem whether they're going to build the next line or not, right? So then you can kind of get a feel for the process.
I didn't know there was any formality, okay, with right. The permits other than DEC and the manufacturer. The rest of the town is left out of the picture. Right? So anyway, let me just continue on with my other issue here. Noise. I know you mentioned decibel levels, and it can be somewhat subjective, but you can also measure it, right?
Yes.
And the chairman mentioned about chippers. I presume that I've never noticed a quiet chipper before either. And I kind of just, is the wind, how is the wind coming at you? Log for?
No, it's a regrind, it's chipped.
When you say regrind of chips?
Yeah.
Okay, so any wind.
The biggest thing you take would be a pallet in our machine. I think you take a pallet and grind it.
So it's more than just chips coming at you.
Pallets would be the biggest thing we could first take.
You won't take any logs?
No logs. It's not a, no. That's a lot bigger.
Yeah, you would like a 600 bucks.
We only have five acres. We don't have room for.
Well, I know fans make a lot of noise. I know air compressors make a difference. What's just a screw machine? But if you got to reciprocate, that's a compressor.
We have an air compressor as well on our nitrogen system for purging any of these fire safety. We have to collect that nitrogen. But that's indoors. That's
just because it's indoors doesn't mean it's quiet.
Yep, so Andrew is Sterling again. As part of the PVC permit process for the solid waste, not the air. There will be a condition in there to physically take noise measurements as part of an annual noise study, subject to their compliance review. So that will be part of the permit conditions that get issued for the standards while solid waste management.
Sometimes I can hear the Textron plant from where my house is. Of course, the traffic. I'm still concerned about that. I think you did do a study on that.
Yes.
And of course, they said everything was fine.
Within acceptable levels, put it that way. Yes.
Okay. When they do that study, do they know or do they consider the development of the other apartments in the area?
Yes.
Is it an actual?
Well, the known projects.
Pardon?
The known projects. Things that are not, you know, that are in the planning queue, so to speak.
Okay. From the DOT standpoint, do they. When did they decide? What criteria do they need before they decide to do something? Let's say on Route 9 coming north, going under 197, they've got a little. Indent there where you can pull off to the right side of the road so you can go on to 197.
Yeah, right turn lane.
Right, and of course, when we get heavy traffic, people go down on the bicycle lane. So, when did they decide to fix that? Or at the 197 intersection with the Andrew Road, there's a lot of people that go left. Let's go straight. There's people scooping off to the side of the shoulder to get around. Are these part of the things that they look at when you do a traffic study?
They look at the operations of the intersections. Once they determine volume of traffic, they look at the operations of the intersections and they're graded. All the movements are graded A through F. And a level of service A is a highly functioning intersection. The turning movements are without delay. What determines the A, B, and C, and D grade is the amount of time that the driver experiences on delay in moving through that intersection. And if level of service drops, then DOT starts to look for ways to mitigate that so the level of service is maintained. And that's why you see turning lanes being added, signals, that kind of thing.
I just don't know what's strange about it. It's hard to determine when that happens. I mean, when I can see a problem, and I don't understand what.
Well, those time frames occur within ranges, and as long as it maintains in that certain range, then it's acceptable. But if it drops down into the next range, then DOT likes to see some mitigation or some improvement made to bring it back up to an acceptable level.
The other thing is discharges. Folks, you've got permits for air, water, right? And from that whole process. And is there any hazardous materials, classified hazardous materials on the site, which I assume sulfuric gas would be?
Correct.
Are there any others?
No.
None.
Sulfuric acid.
But there's a storage of hazardous materials on the premises.
But we do it safely with a spill basin. If anywhere it occurred, it would be So it would,
it's in concrete.
It's in a concrete spill basin. If anything would happen to it, but that's standard protocol.
And what about fire, potential fire explosions? Like you mentioned that thing. Where did that accumulate? Where we don't see?
No. Well, we have air out of that receiving area constantly in the air treatment system 24/7.
But there's no place for that. I mean, when you, this is a 6-to-6 operation.
Receiving is 6-to-6. Processing is
24/7. The plant's going to operate 24/7.
Mm-hmm. The machine is that. So any of the, what we call it, synthesis gas or syngas is created from the material, all that is burned in the thermal oxidizer immediately. So anything we create in the oven is immediately destroyed and oxidized, and that's basically the energy source for our
dryer. That goes through your drying system.
It's actually just a standard dryer.
That's some of the burning gases?
The thermal oxidizer is oxidizing the gas.
Pardon?
We oxidize, we basically burn all the gas we create from the material and use the heat for the dryer.
Uses the heat for the dryer?
Yeah. So, and then everything from that dryer goes through our advanced air treatment system. The auxiliary air going into the system, all combustion air, everything. That's how we create the
dryer.
And we also source from the building and vent it like from the.
That's where you're dropping the moisture off, right?
Yeah, and when it drops out the dryer. And basically, the main vision you see is water vapor and carbon dioxide in the process. Everything else is treated. We actually recycle some of the water from our scrubbers into our fertilizer just because it's, you know, the money and fertilizer is created in the process.
That's all.
Anyone else have any questions for this or comments concerning this application? You can go with this easy. Okay. Check. And I regret to inform you that I do believe public hearing is closed. Whatever time that is. 8:56. Turn about as always fair play. Applicant, do you have any further questions of us?
No.
I think that is a negative. Thank you. And we will look forward to your decision on the consultant as soon as Mr. Moss has an opportunity to put everything appropriately together for you.
I hope to have that done in the next couple days, get the first draft out of the local services. Distributed to everybody for input, and I'll try and reference in that email message a time frame that I'd like the responses back so it doesn't drag on. We are coming up on the holiday season, but we'll try and get this done as quickly as we can. Very good, thank you.
One other thing, I guess, before we wrap on the project, there was a review letter by a Burge group of the SWIFT. I'm hoping you can provide comments on that.
Yes,
we have learned that the Ray Appleseer took by Charlie. We are in receipt of LaBerge's review of the SWIC. Our consultant, Matt Huntington, from Studio Way Landscape Architecture, is already working on addressing the shortcomings in that. We will have that by the time we see you again. It won't take long.
Okay.
Matt, would you like to add anything?
Yeah, I'm Matt Huntington with Studio Way. I mean, the only thing I can add to that is the majority, if not all, the comments in there were really housekeeping items in the SWIC. None of really had any effect on the actual drawings or the site plan. We just have some administrative appendices that need to be included, etc.
But you're in the process of addressing those to satisfy LaBerge.
Correct.
Great, thank you.
Thank you.
Anything further? If not, we'll give you 27 seconds, so we'll go to the next one.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Oh, you're a good question.
I got a project on Old Saratoga Road for revising. Any questions?
Yeah, can we just go?
Sidebar conversation. Egress to the foyer. Go for it.
I was waiting for this to warm up, so. Anyway, Joe Danable with the Environmental Design Partnership, and I've been preparing on behalf of Cerrone Builders. In our application to amend the approvals associated with the preserve at Old Saratoga.
You know, the old easel with the paper that took the engineer at least 2 or 3 minutes to get it to put it properly. So don't worry if it takes a minute for it to warm up. We're used to that.
Well, he's getting his projector warmed up there. The one item I had on my list is to talk to the highway superintendent. I did speak to Paul, and he's back and feeling better. And I think I forwarded the email that came from him. Paul's very direct and to the point. He thought it was a good change. He likes the idea of the removal of one of the cul-de-sacs and shortening the amount of road to maintain. He did want, I think, to make sure that there was, I think, some sort of turnaround provided, you know, during the interim.
Until which we've already agreed to do it if we need it at the end of phase one.
And that was the extent of his comment.
Once he's happy, we're on.
That's right.
Ideally, we were here in November. We really didn't have many comments from the board. The board wanted us to go through engineering review as well as contact the highway superintendent. We did provide new detailed plans that were submitted to LaBerge. LaBerge did provide a comment letter today on the layout. I believe that was forwarded to everyone on the board.
Yep.
There was essentially two comments on there. One was verify groundwater separation to the bodily infiltration basin was 3 feet. The other comment was add a note to a detail for a monitoring well in the bottom of that basin that needs to extend 3 feet below the surface.
We didn't get that paperwork.
I didn't see that either. I looked for it on my email.
For Harrison Avenue Apartments. I think that may be what we got.
That was all I got from your stuff, Joel. I looked right before I came in and didn't see it.
Okay. Is there something we need, or?
If you got it, you can forward it to my email right now, and I'll print it out for the board members. So the last thing I saw from Phil was he said he didn't have time to get to this one. We're hoping to maybe have it on it. We're going to ask the board if they want to look at this again next week.
That was the one we confused it on. Yeah. So they did not come in with a review letter. It was the opposite.
Okay, then you didn't get something that we didn't get.
You did not. I misspoke. And I switched.
See how easy it is to mix this stuff up?
Yes, it is. I was getting all excited because I thought I had already seen that letter.
If you just rewind 10 seconds.
Right? 10 seconds. We did not get the letter on this project, and those comments that I just provided did not occur from this project. We did meet with LaBerge in their office a week ago Thursday, so almost a week and a half ago, to go over the submission. They did, at that point in time, we thought it was going to be a relatively simple review. We have an NOI. We have all the stormwater in place.
No, I think I want to pause there and say I think that's a significant point. A stormwater permit has been issued for this project, you know, as the approved subdivision. So we're working on a modification here and not just a whole new permit submission. So that's a key point. I just want to emphasize that.
And we're not changing the stormwater ponds from the current sizes that they are proposed. We're actually reducing the impervious area on site, and we're reducing the limits of disturbance on the site, both moving in a positive direction, but yet we're not reducing the size of any of the stormwater infrastructure so that we still will be able to treat it With respect to the original permit that was issued. Again, looking at the area, we went from the cul-de-sac, Slater Press Lane with 7 lots, to fronting those lots directly on the new road. Slight modification to the road of profile, not the alignment, just to do a better cut fill and reduce some of the impacts associated with the property.
And I just want to reemphasize too, I don't have the drawing here in front of me, but the lot, Joe, where there's the shared driveway.
Yes.
We'd like to incorporate our standard treatments in that for making sure the deeds reflect, you know, the sharing of the access.
Correct.
And so there's a maintenance agreement in place between the two property owners.
Certainly. And that's what we will provide, an easement over the as-built center line to be established at that point in time in the construction. So with that, again, we're here. We know we had talked about it at the last meeting. I believe the board waived the need to go through a public hearing on this project or also refer it to the county, as this is just an amendment. So it would be the hope that we could get a conditional approval from this board, if it be possible, based upon an engineering review. This isn't something new. This is a project where we already have the stormwater in place, an NOI in place, and the purview of the engineering review for the project for the Burges to look at the stormwater on the property. And again, since we're changing it, reducing the impervious, not changing the watershed dynamics or how the water flows, and reducing the impervious area, it seems like this is about as straightforward as a modification as we could come up with. And there could be a conditional approval issued tonight that we address any comments that LaBerge may come up with. I think that would be a great thing. We can keep this project moving. We are moving into, tried to set up a pre-construction meeting with the town because we can start building Lookout Circle as well as the entrance road into the site without any need for any additional approvals from this board. So construction is slated to start on the property under the existing permits that are in place. We're simply looking again to modify it. I think I'll be here quite often. I'll be here next Monday, too.
Okay. First thing that I can think of, unless I missed it, is you need a shared driveway agreement of some sort, which language would then be reviewed by the town council. Mm-hmm. And that shouldn't be 2-4-2, for one
of the very, so similar. Board, anything further? I think Eric raised this at the last meeting. There was an archaeological area that straddles 2 lots.
Correct.
And I think there may be some consideration given to put in some sort of deed restriction to ensure that that is preserved by some kind of buffer. Mm-hmm. So that would be a deed restriction in those lots.
Yes.
Well,
so
there wouldn't necessarily be a deed restriction, because the town cannot enforce deeds. What we would need to be for something particularly important, it would have to be annotated on the approved drawing, and then the town has the authority to enforce that.
Okay.
Other than that, homeowners can look at it and say, go away.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so annotation, whatever.
That is annotated on the plans. This is the original note for the archaeological census variance that went with the original approvals that was signed off by SHPO. There's been no change to that. That note will remain on the amended plans.
And the note says I can't read them.
Let me see if I can.
And I have the mini version of the plan here, which I need to
Let me see if I can read it here.
Did you find it? Yeah. No.
No, it's not a touch screen, that's why.
Great, we're all going to be mine by the end of the month here.
Give me the hand. Page 2, right? There's a note right there. That one I can read. I can't read the sizes of the lot numbers. I guess that's what I need for Christmas is those readers.
Were you looking for the language on the...
It says, note number one, archaeological sensitive area, 20-foot buffer area will be subject to permanent deed restriction prohibiting any activities that may disturb archaeological artifacts, including tree removal, without prior authorization from the New York State Historic Preservation Office.
Nice.
Note number two, install orange construction grade fencing around archaeologically sensitive area, 20-foot buffer prior to commencement of any construction or land activities within the vicinity of this area. Construction fence to remain in place until all adjacent disturbed areas have established a stable vegetated ground cover.
Okay, that sounds good. All right, and the other thing I understand, this is a realty subdivision. I know you got the DOH approval for the original subdivision. But if you modify the subdivision, I think you're supposed to go back to the DOH and get their approval again. And I think that's for the entire subdivision as opposed to looking at it in two halves. So that I would assume that you have to get the DOH approval of the modified subdivision before you can start construction on the part of the subdivision you're not amended. That's correct.
Yes, it is.
I would have to look into that. We could not start construction on any portion of the project that is within the modified area.
Yeah, then I thought DOH gives you approval for the entire subdivision.
Yes.
Now, we might be getting site plan approval.
The problem is we don't...
Subdivision approval on a portion of it.
We can't modify the entire subdivision because we don't own the entire subdivision. Three of the 27 lots... So they're not going to be modifying the entire subdivision. They're going to be doing a modification of a portion of the subdivision.
Well, again, my understanding is DOH needs to approve a modification of the subdivision.
Yes, we do.
Before you can start constructing on a portion that you're saying you're not changing today.
Correct. On the portion we're not changing.
We can't start construction yet.
On any of it?
That's what my understanding.
I don't believe that is the case, but we can look into that.
I would, because we had changed to us previously. The modification to the full subdivision, although it was first, we didn't realize we had it. I had to hand it to us for this event.
Well, we certainly can look into that if that is the case.
That would be the most appropriate.
We may take some different avenues.
Okay. Oh, God, tell me this is not.
I have easy questions. I'm going to make sure he has time to write that note down first. Because that one seems a lot more complicated. What are the sizes of the three pie-shaped lots? Lot sizes?
They're all excess of an acre. They're just over an acre.
Okay. All right. This is a kind of a related, unrelated question. The situation has arisen. It's kind of gotten in my craw a little bit here. Do you have any stormwater mitigation that travels across private lots from one lot to another in this project that isn't handled under an HOA?
I would say the answer is no.
I would, under the modified section you're working on right now, I would say the answer is no. Under the whole subdivision, it might not be, but it's a moot point. I understand that. But under these mitigated or the modified areas. And he's laughing because he knows why I'm asking that question.
Might have something to do with the
application. Yes. But we'll get to that in a later portion of the evening. Okay. But I'm just curious because I didn't see him. But my eyes are
Yeah, taking a look at this, I don't see where stormwater, there's no swales across rear yards or the need for it. We're dealing with much bigger lots in this scenario than we are dealing with some of the smaller clustered lots and subdivisions.
And most of the stormwater mitigation for the road is handled within the right-of-way of the road.
Correct, or within the basins associated with it. And
okay.
I'd say all of it.
Just wanted to, I think that's the standard question I'm going to be asking from now on,
okay,
subdivision approval. So I just thought I would ask that. So I asked this question last month, but I just want to be sure I was right about it, because I'm pretty sure you said yes. It is possible for the lot closest to the cul-de-sac, or Hidden Pond Way, that lot can egress and ingress to that contact with the road. It's just difficult, right? I think I did ask that, and we verified that they could do it. It would just be expensive and unnecessary. The one with the shared driveway.
Oh, correct. Okay, I got it.
It can be done. It would just be expensive and unnecessary, but it can be done.
Correct. On those lots,
all we have to know is that it can be done. If there's like some wetland there that says you can never cross, and you know, or a cliff that's impossible to build anything less than a bridge for. So, okay. That's all I have. I happen to like the improvement as far as eliminating an unnecessary road, and I think the lot. Usually, if you have an extra road, it's because it makes the lots better. In this case, I don't think it did. I think I like what's been done. So.
Again, you can put it. Now, we've heard a request from the applicant. So, what is your desire concerning that request?
I'm going to make a conditional approval for Swift Comments, shared driveway agreement, and an answer on this Department of Health issue.
What was the second one?
Shared driveway agreement.
Okay.
Any good?
I would still like to see the comments on this. So I understand you think they're nominal, will be nominal comments, but we've been surprised before. I mean, not by this project, but others. So the Swift comments to me are important.
What else? Maybe? What you desire?
So could I, Ann?
Yeah.
So my take on a conditional approval would be that if it's conditioned on the Swift comments, and that it would be that they address what our engineer feels needs to be changed. So I guess my question is what do you foresee? What is your need to see it? Is that just because you'd like to see what things are because you're not sure that would be adequate?
Yeah, if I were, I'm on board.
Right, you are.
This
is actually a question.
These are the conditions. And when someone said, "Oh, the mylars are in,"
right,
I would feel uncomfortable independently saying that condition was satisfied.
Okay.
It was reviewed, and they have an NOR. So they could go tomorrow and build it Swift as it was. And now they're modifying the lesser of that.
Yeah.
So that's for the conditional approval. I don't think they need to come back. We'll get the letter, and if they have to, if they are significant, but I don't think we need to hold them up on an approved project.
Yeah, prior to the chairman signing the final plans, we'll have a letter from the Burge that's sent to the town that says we have no further, the comments have been adequately addressed.
Yeah, I guess my point of departure here is the fact that there's a SWIP in place. There's a permit issue. They have an NOI. If this were our normal procedure where we're simply doing the SWIP review, then yeah, our process has been wait till the condition, we get the letters, we get a clean letter from the Burge. This year, that's an extenuating circumstance, and in the staff's opinion that there's a permit issue.
Yeah.
So we're simply modifying the permit.
So Jim, legal isn't here, but I'll ask you this: if just so I understand the process here, if we condition it on the town engineer review and your dealing with that. And they look at one of them and go, yeah, that's just not doable. We're just not going
to
do it.
Then they got to come back to you again.
Okay.
Or not at all, and we just build what we have.
Yeah, no, I'm not trying to be contentious. I'm just trying to understand, you know.
No, if it's something insurmountable, then it's got to, at that point, then it's got to come back again and see if it can be resolved.
I'm just trying to make it comfortable in my mind that if the engineer says, if the town's engineer says this is a problem and it should be fixed, that our conditional approval means that they have to find some way to meet that request.
And what would be looked for, you reference the Mylars, when you come in to sign the Mylars, these conditions, the evidence of those conditions being met, have to be supplied to the signatories before they sign off. One of which is always Peter, as the chairman, and then another member.
So we basically are doing preliminary and final approval at the same time, but it's conditioned approval. Is that what we're doing final?
No, see, again, this is not even that. This is not preliminary and final. This is an approved subdivision.
Right.
They're modifying an aspect of an approved subdivision. They've already gone and got their
okay.
It's not just what planning, it's actually permitted.
I gotcha. Okay, so it's basically final approval of the amendment, subject to the condition that there is a shared drive agreement that is signed off on by.
Because that is a new aspect of this approval. They're now sharing a driveway between two lots that they weren't previously sharing.
Right. And that there be satisfactory engineer review of the SWIP and satisfaction of all the requirements of the engineer. And that there be New York State DOH approval of the subdivision modification.
And those three items have to be in place and available for you to review with the Mylar before it's signed.
Okay, I'm good. I'm good with that.
Yep. Now I'll go back to my other question. What do you want to do?
Well, we have a motion and a second, mm-hmm. right?
Do we have a second? I'll second.
I thought we had a second. That's why we're having a discussion.
No.
I'm sorry. Somebody should have thought.
No, why not?
Yeah. Hey. Yeah. Anybody has a Robert's Rules to throw at me for that? So are you still looking for a second, or did you catch it over there?
I think Mike seconded it, right?
I'll second
it.
Down here, Dan.
I already did discussion. I completely missed. We didn't have a second.
We're just waiting for Peter. All approval.
All right.
I guess I'm not running fast enough tonight.
Better hurry up.
I understand that we have a motion to grant
the modification.
Approval to the modification for the reserve at all Saratoga with conditions such as DOH, the requirements of the SWIP, and the shared driveway agreement with review by town engineer, town council.
Yes.
Motion to make and seconded. Any further discussion? If not, you can call it over.
Meredith Matias.
Aye.
John Arnold.
Aye.
Andrew Dew.
Aye.
Mike Shaver.
Aye.
Gerald Bouchard.
Aye.
Peter Jensen.
Aye. I have six confirmed. Yes. Yes.
Mr. Chairman, correct. Just one additional comment. I know that I've seen it done some municipalities when there's a modification of an approval granted. Sometimes they reference that the project is consistent with the original seeker findings for the record, if that is needed.
I think that would be a wise thing to do.
Okay. Well, if you insist.
Just trying to protect everybody. I'll say in the town on that one.
You've heard the comment, which is a very good one from the applicant board. What do you want to do? is consistent with the previously approved sequel?
If it isn't, it's probably better. It's been a long time. See, I was the original seeker was done like a month before I came on this board.
I've taken a route here. What the seeker was then?
What's that?
Do we have to look at what they did? I don't know.
I don't know.
How do we do that, Jim, if that's feasible, given that it's so many years later?
We approved the project. We had to have approved secret. So we're now asking to use modification for the beginning and what the detrimental environmental results of the modification. I will move in for a strong order, so it's not us.
Did they need to file an EAF?
Oh, yes.
I mean, no, there's a modification, and that's...
No.
So in other words, we didn't have to do a secret.
No, not for this modification.
And I would say this is it's got to be in compliance with that original secret. It's got to be better than the original secret.
Yeah, but I don't know if we're in a position to make a, or need to make a determination. This isn't a triggering event.
Right, I agree.
So, I don't know if we need to do that.
I'm going to agree with you, Ken, on this.
You are?
Yeah.
Okay.
Come on. I'm agreeable. Come on. Jeez.
So just tell me what you want to do.
Well, if we don't do anything, then we're moving right along, right?
That's right.
You want a motion for the chairman and one other board member to sign the Mylars when they're presented?
That would be good.
Thank you.
Motion is going to make.
It hasn't? Okay.
Did I not write down when we decided to approve the modification?
We did the conditional approval.
We did conditional.
Yep. Sure. We have approval.
And push it now.
And you're mentioning that until the conditions are done, there would be no signing of the Mylars, so that reminded me we needed to sign the Mylars eventually. So.
Motion has been made. Yep. The chair and another member of the chairman will sign the Mylars for the preserve of the modification to the preserve of the territory when presented. To the motion, do I have a second?
Fine.
All right.
Yep.
Motion has been made and second. Any further discussion? If not, I don't think this is too controversial. I don't want to run out the voice of the secretary. All those in favor, aye?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Thank you.
Let that go to later.
Have a good one.
Good shot.
Okay.
Thanks,
guys.
All right, so that's this one.
So you can go back your
good.
There you go.
Yes, we got it later.
Thank you.
Yeah, have a good night.
Yep, we'll see you next week.
Okay.
All right, Luke Michaels, Michaels Group Home, submitted a cover letter and some information as well with regards to addresses 11, 13, and 15 Winterberry Lane, which is the subdivision we're building off of Bluebird Road. We're about, just over halfway built out. Last November, we built and sold and closed these lots, 11, 13, and 15. The new owners were in those homes, and earlier this spring, they contacted the town board about doing some work behind their homes. It included clearing, grading, reseeding, a number of different items. And after the work was completed, it was brought to my attention that I needed to address our SWIP plan for the entire site since there were changes made to it. So what you do have is a letter from EDP which talks about the original SWIP permit, the changes that were made, their discoveries from all the assessments they did on the work that was done, basically from the as-built. And in summary, They thought that the work that was done did not result in any significant impacts to the neighboring and downstream properties, and the site remains in compliance with the design requirements of the DEC Stormwater Management Design Manual. So, based on the work that was done, the as-built that were taken, EDP confirms that the work that was done was not significant and not too much of a change. But it's been brought to my attention. I still need to bring this to the board to accept or change these elements of the SWIP, if I'm presenting that correctly, Jim, or not.
You did a pretty good job.
All right.
The situation here is, as Luke described, at some point early summer, three property owners, and they had bought and purchased these homes from the Michael Group and even gotten, I think, their CO. They decided that they would like to modify the grade of their property for various reasons. And where the town started to get involved is we own the property adjoining the rear lot line. The town does. I should say the town owns the lot that adjoins these properties to the rear. And the nature of the grading and modifications that were to be done also affect the town property. The excavator entered into a contract with the town to go on town property and do that work. And the work was done. You know, is this the best way to do this? In my opinion, it is not. This is
so
my opinion.
The township got the LaBerge.
Huh?
The township got the LaBerge and said.
Well, the town was not the initiator of this action. The three property owners. The nature of the action required permission from the town to go on our property, go on town property, and modify the grade. And it was modified significantly. Where the Michaels Group is still on the record here, so to speak, is the SWIP over these three lots was not completely closed. The grade, the final seeding and all that was not established, so the SWIP is still technically active on these three lots, or on at least a couple of them anyhow. And the other thing is, the Michaels Group is the permit holder on the overall SWIP, the overall plan for this entire subdivision. Because it is, I think as John was alluding to in the prior review, this one is interrelated. This drainage on this subdivision functions as a system. And it's reliant upon certain grades being maintained across the lots in order for it to function. That's the permits issued on that as a predicate. So what happened was the grade changed, and now we just want to confirm that the integrity of the permit and the overall SWIP plan itself is maintained, and the site continues to drain as it was intended to drain with the SWIP. And I think what Luke is indicating here is that his engineer has gone to the site, and on the basis of the information they provided, in their opinion, that integrity has been maintained. You had a modification here, I think, last month for the same subdivision, a much smaller one, on the other side of the subdivision for, you know, installation of a drywall or something to that effect, as I recall. It's in that same vein, however, this is a little bit more involved. There was a lot of work done here.
It's different. The significance of the difference is the previous adaptation was taking a system that was supposed to be designed to handle the stormwater on site, but was altered by the property owners wrongly, as far as I'm concerned. If you're allowed to figure that as part of your engineering for stormwater, it should maintain. And I'm sure you would like it to, or your client would. but we still manage the water on site. This one is different in the fact that we're now saying that these three lots used to flow to the north because of the grade. And now the sheet flow is going to flow to the south to an adjoining property. Okay, which is different. Now we're, not only are we changing the original design, we're changing the system as it performs. It's no longer performing as it used to. Right?
That is not my understanding. This, in the change condition, is to function and drain as it did before and not to change.
Now, see, that's not what the description says here from EDP. What I read does not say that.
Well, and if that's the case, then, you know, this needs to be reviewed.
And I'm very uncomfortable with the wording that EDP uses in the page 2, section 2.2. All right, the first paragraph describes the change in handling stormwater. The second paragraph specifically says, given the pre-development drainage pattern, largely to the south, and considering the fact that the property to the south is a vacant wooded site consisting of sandy soils with high infiltration rates, it's EDP's opinion that the relatively recent grading changes in the rear yards of lots 11, 13, and 15 will not negatively impact the adjoining property. So it's very nice of EDP to say that the water now flowing off-site onto that adjoining property won't have any negative impact on that adjoining property. It happens that the town owns it. If I owned it, I may disagree with that. Okay, that's why we specifically in our code say that we ask that developers handle their stormwater on-site.
It is my understanding that the prior condition or the prior intent of the permit as issued, stormwater permit as issued, is for that to happen. And I don't know of any provision for that to change.
So you're saying that the original stormwater plan for this site was to manage the water from 11, 13, and 15 traveling north. Somehow it eventually ended up going on to the neighbor's property heading south.
No, what was supposed to happen is, as I understood it, the original grading in the originally approved permit was the water was supposed to flow ultimately to the pond.
Right. Which it does not do according to EDP. Now it flows sheet flow onto the adjoining property. And what they're saying is, but because it's vacant wood and it's well drained, it's not a problem.
I think that's just in reference to neighboring properties. And I think there is some more information within here which talks about the actual function of the system itself. And I think in the amount of water, if you go to the chart at the end with the pre-development rates, approved, post, in that chart, and what they're saying is that it's not enough to make a significant change to the existing SWIFT that's in place.
So there is a change. It's just
correct. That's how I read it. There is a change, but it doesn't result in any significant impacts to the neighboring and downstream properties.
Well, I think what you're asking is that we approve a modification to stormwater that our consultant had approved.
Correct.
And you're asking us to now approval modification, and we're cutting him out, and he bears some responsibility for what happens here on the site.
Correct.
And that puts the onus back on the town, and I'm not comfortable with that. I think they should go back to the original consultant who did the stormwater review and have him provide comments as, yes, you idiots, it's not going to do a thing, or if he does not agree with what he does, what his proposal is to remedy what this proposal is doing.
Well, I guess my position is I agree with that.
I do.
I also feel that in this case, the three property owners, having altered the plan, should now get together with you or whoever and come up with a new plan to treat this water on site. Not just, now it's going to go do this. Oh, well, it shouldn't be a big deal. Okay, if it's not a big deal, it shouldn't be a big deal to remediate it, right?
Well, I don't know. I don't believe so. I think that it would be a big deal to some degree, but it's my opinion that that should be worked out with the property owners and the neighboring property, which is the town. You'll see there is an agreement that was made between the town and the contractor. I don't know if everyone has this, but this is a contract that was done between the town and the contractor to where in this contract it states that, just give me 1 second while I will, in this scope of work, this is between the town and the contractor who did the work.
Can you give me the page number on that, please?
Yeah, so this is at the end, it's actually the last page in what I submitted.
But I didn't see anything in the beginning, and I was like, well.
So in the second paragraph, in the middle, it says, the finished grade will also be achieved in such a manner so that the operation of the stormwater management system for the subdivision remains intact upon completion of the work. Now, this is between the town and the contractor and the property owners, where me as holding a SWIP permit, I never got to review this, I never got to sign off on it, I never got to have any input in it. Not that I wanted to.
Why would the town get involved when there's a homeowner? They just say you have to deal with your homeowners. Even though right now it's a microgrid.
Well, at the time, so the homeowners did approach me in the beginning asking if we could do something. They had a condition in the backyard where the water couldn't get to the town property because there was a hill this high in the backyard. That was all natural grade, existing grade. And they asked me to take it down, to take away trees that were in danger of falling on their properties. And I wasn't able to. I'm not able to do that because that line is right at the top of the hill. And in order to do anything, I have to encroach on town property. And you can't do that. And
that's what that contract was intended to allow for.
And
in my opinion, that wording is saying that the integrity of the original plan is to be maintained.
Yes.
And it wasn't.
Right. That was my...
So...
Well, and I think that what the next part is, and I'll go to is at the end, is that upon the completion of the project, the contractor should notify the SMO so a final inspection can be made and, and then I guess they would provide a written list of deficient items for contractor to resolve. So it could still be on the contractor to resolve it, but I don't think that comes from us. And if that's that, you know, minor adjustment that needs to be made, I think that comes from the parties that were in with this agreement.
And in my opinion, I think this certainly needs to go off to LaVerge for review, and I think you also need to hear from Carl on this.
This is Jerry. I'd like to add a comment too. I have a very clear recollection of one of the neighbors who lived off the backside of this development coming to the board a couple months after we approved the subdivision, and he was quite concerned about stormwater coming down that hill. I don't recall his name, but he lives on Fort Edward Road.
Yes.
One of the houses on there. And, yeah. And he came in and he talked, and he was quite concerned. And as a board, we gave him assurances that there was a stormwater plan in place and that it was engineered to prevent the things he was worried about. So I'm going to be very hesitant about taking on very much of this personally. As a board member, we've already told people that we have this covered.
Well, I think that gets right back into the vein of the need to go back to the consultant for his comments.
Yeah, because I guess I was getting where I was getting to earlier is I'm not really sure what place we have in this. I mean, I don't see unless I'm missing something, I don't see a revision. It's almost like you're just asking us.
One of the pages that was approved by the planning board and signed is the drainage plan.
Right, well, what I'm saying is it's almost like we're not really being asked to approve revisions because I'm not seeing revisions made. It seems like we're being asked to approve the mistake that was made.
Yes.
Which I'm not going to do. I don't think it's my job here as planner. I think this is something that needs to be handled through the building department, maybe through the town because they had some action in this. I did not realize that when a developer is developing a thing, you know, a property, that property owners could start messing with the stormwater plan while the development was still being built, and it all falls in your lap still. And it could happen without you being notified. In this case, we were.
Situation. I've been doing this for 25 years and never seen.
Yeah, this is definitely not.
Never seen this happen.
And this is a pretty sizable one. I actually took a run through there.
Yeah.
They didn't have like a bobcat in the backyard. All right. They moved some major stuff. They didn't just eliminate a couple of trees.
There were hundreds of yards. There's hundreds of yards of soil every month.
Well, my question is, why wasn't it stopped when it started?
Why did it start?
Why wasn't it stopped?
Yeah.
Somebody had to see it. I mean, you're in that subdivision every day, probably, right?
Yeah.
That was the July.
We've been out at this site the Thursday before July 4th.
Yep.
The last thing I was told by one of the homeowners involved was that they'd gotten a quote from the contractor, the price was too high, the work was not going to be done. It was a moot point. I come into the office the next week after the holiday, it was done.
So did the price change, or?
So it was done before they had a contract with the town? Is that right?
No, he signed the contract. He signed it on the 25th.
No, you said the work was done within a week.
Saturday.
So they already had a contract with the town?
Yes.
Correct?
Apparently.
So somebody knew this was going to get done, and it shouldn't have been done. Period. Correct?
For the record, yes. And at that time, yes, I saw the work, but I am in no position to stop it or do anything. That's private property at that point, which I am.
I agree.
These properties are turned over. One's a town's property. Three owners who live there, and according to Jim, if I have this right, if these properties were seeded at the time, then or the grass was growing, I guess it would be off of the SWIP. We could take that check.
Well, I'm just that's what was described to me by Matt Schweidmiller, the town stormwater officer. That you have to have full stabilization of the site before the SWIP is fulfilled.
Yeah, and obviously.
And then the other nebulous point here is that's only on those individual lots. The entire SWIP is still open until the subdivision sells out and the final lot stabilizes.
Yeah.
And that's another factor that comes into play here.
Yeah, and I think on a, you know, if someone who's, you know, it closed and, you know, they're in there for 3 years and they put in a pool or something, there's a permitted place where all that's going to be reviewed and everything's still, grades are still working the same way. And there was obviously an agreement and approval in place, I just don't know.
Well, I think, you know, the system can accommodate what I would term a minor, pool, a minor modification, or what happened last fall.
Right.
But this is a significant change.
So I'm going to say this, as a town rural planning board member, I'm going to say my position on this is, if for some reason there is a modification to this stormwater plan, I'll be happy to look at it for potential approval. But right now I don't see a modification. I see a mistake that was made that needs to be remedied in some way. I'm very uncomfortable with the idea that we now are handling stormwater off-site. That really makes me uncomfortable, and I'm really uncomfortable with how relaxed EDP is with, it's going that way anyways.
Right. The other factor is timing and limited authority. I mean, I have no authority to engage LaBerge to do this review and incur that cost. That can only be done by this board with the consent, of the permit holder here. It's going to be more escrow. It's going to be, more fee. I don't have the authority to do that. So nobody's trying to suggest that, just approve a mistake. This has to happen in an orderly fashion, with the right, protocol and the right order of events here. I just can't say, let's engage the verge and incur a cost.
So where does it go now?
Well, it goes now if we don't approve any modifications. Then we have to go back to the, I guess it's whoever owns it, Michaels?
He doesn't own it.
No, it's three properties.
It's three properties.
Well, the problem is, the problem, technically speaking,
it's his fault.
But if this goes on to its conclusion and the final lot developed, and you want to notice the termination of the permit, he's not going to get it.
Yeah. Right.
Because the permit, the basis for the permit has under which it was issued hasn't been changed. So DEC is not going to sign off on this permit in this current condition.
So we should refer this to Carla ASAP, correct?
Well,
so here's some legal advice on this?
It seems the owners have to put the land back the way it was, unless there was a...
Well, I don't think...
All right, so wait.
That's not possible, but I do think it is possible.
They can
review
the issue that it brings up.
That there can be grading established that will bring back the original intent of the permit. And in other words, the water stays on site and flows to the ponds.
They should have to work with you on that and your engineer, because it's your permit that you're trying to get ponds to sign off on at the end.
Well, it's true, but I don't know that I'm going to be consenting to any escrow work of any kind. I think in the situation.
No, I didn't say that you should have to do the escrow. What I'm saying is that the property owner should have to work with you, because it's your stormwater plan that they've muddled in here. Do you understand? They're the ones that have messed up the stormwater.
Mm-hmm.
So really, it should be them. That's what I'm trying to figure out. Right. How do you get to that?
James, did they get building permits to do this?
That was where I was going with this. I'll guarantee they didn't get a permit, and they moved the size of the
building. There's no building permit for this.
Removing that much.
There's no way to be done.
We don't do grading. That's change the grading.
No. We have no grading permit.
I have a question. Jerry speaking. I'm looking at the description of tonight's agenda, and we're being asked to, I guess the applicant is seeking amendment to the grading plan and a related amendment to the SWIP. So we haven't seen any amendment to the SWIP, right?
No.
No, there wouldn't need to be. What EDP is saying is that we wouldn't need an amendment to the SWIP because there's not a significant change.
Well, that's not for us to decide.
But we don't have.
We
don't have a revised grading plan to submit to LaBerge, and we don't have anyone to pay for the review.
Well, we have a correct. We have a existing grading plan, an as-built plan, and a letter from EDP that says that as-built plan does not show a significant change for the stormwater for winter barriers.
And that's your engineer. We need somebody on our end, because our engineers are the ones that approve this.
It would be my suggestion that you table this discussion until we have Carl with us.
Yeah. We need...
I agree.
I'm not saying stones at you. Don't get that.
Yes.
No, that's not your fault.
Because
I don't know the status of the town's contract with the excavator here. I don't know that is a... There may be some unresolved issues there that she's aware of that I don't know. I don't think that contract has been completely fulfilled.
But that's an adjacent property that's not our concern, right? I mean, there's not an issue in front of us that the adjacent property owner did something wrong involving the planning board, right?
What do you mean the adjacent property owner?
The town contract portion of it.
This is all in... To some degree, it's a connected issue.
Yeah.
Well, so you're saying that the town's contract affected the stormwater plan?
No, I'm saying that...
This discussion is not the right place to have right now.
Yes.
Right.
I agree with you.
We need to go back.
It's all hypothesis, and we're not... We're not in a position to know any facts. So
correct.
I mean, we're
just sitting.
We are continuing to issue permits on the subdivision. You know, I think I signed off on three of them the other day. So it's continuing to build up.
Yeah, of course.
But
ultimately,
this is an issue though that has to be resolved.
Yes.
Because I don't see how this permit closes. You know, if this aspect of it is not resolved.
Okay. Motion made. No more discussion until Jim has stuff in his car.
I think she needs to be here at a meeting.
Okay.
And speak with the board about this. Mm-hmm. Whether it's via Zoom or whatever, she needs to be part of this discussion.
I think very definitely she does. And I don't, my personal opinion is mine only, not the board's, that I'm not qualified to give an opinion on the revisions of stormwater. It needs to go back to the consultant who did it. Failure to do so, and this board should not work, approve any modification to anything that we previously approved. We have drainage on the approved subdivision. We should not modify that until we hear from our consultant.
But I just want to emphasize, I, as a staff person here, I was not coming here tonight seeking approval.
No.
I was cut, this, in my role here was to start the process.
Yes.
And there's other parties that have to be involved here. This was not coming here seeking an approval.
No. Never thought it was. Of course, the applicant would love to see that. It's not going to happen.
Am I the applicant?
I was going to say that.
You're not in the North Pole tonight.
I am sympathetic to the position that you're finding yourself in at the moment.
We'll figure it out.
We're caught between a rock and a hard thing.
I'm
going to vote to adjourn.
You do want to table this pending consultation with council, right?
Also, can I vote for Spirit Forest, Mr. Mark, and then Mr. Forest Ross?
No, I do not. Next week, as Mike, I think, surmised, the public hearing is not occurring for the PUD on Route 9. There's some other steps that I think the applicant's considering before they get to that point. So the agenda is as you have received.
Are they coming at all?
Well, they will eventually, but not next week. Jim,
how do they make out with the sewer?
With the...
Do they have to hook to the sewer, or did you not hear anything about that?
I didn't hear anything. I got an email from the attorney, and I didn't have a chance to read it yet, though. I don't know.
You were going to have a copy of some action that the board's taken at the moment?
Oh, the map on the sewer.
The map or whatever? Did we?
Yes, that was sent to you. It's on your email.
It was a digital one.
Yes.
Said you'd have
I'll make the copies. Yes, I can make those copies.
My email doesn't go with the phone, it goes with the computer.
Yeah,
you need to show that to other people.
Exactly.
All right.
Okay. I'll be 2 seconds.
Sure. We have a motion to adjourn on the floor. I'm going to adjourn.
I got it, yeah.
Motion to adjourn the second before discussion. It's not all over here.
Aye.
Well, you know, I was discussing that whole stormwater meeting site on the other property while I was digging on the edge of my property where my two waterways go into the neighbor's land. Okay. It's all part of the survey council plan.
Where's our money tonight?
Okay.
Where's your boat?
I now have water.
Got it?
Because there's no way for me to drain it.
There you go. You're welcome, sir. I think that biochar thing, man, that stuff is way over my head. I'm like, oh my God, I don't get it. That's what they were hoping.